CLE File, the ultimate Browns podcast with Nate Lundy.
Let's talk Browns, and let's do it with Aaron Goldhammer. He's on Twitter at HammerNation19, part of ESPN Cleveland. Now, first of all, Aaron, before we get into this, how exactly does one become a succulent sports talk host, as your Twitter handle so brilliantly displays in your bio?
Well, it takes years and years of practice, and it's a title that only the fans can bestow on you. So, they're the ones who decide who gets the official succulent tag, and I'm the only one in history of life that has ever received it. So, good luck.
Nice. Aaron, as we get ready for this season with Cleveland, look back on the training camp and the preseason for me and tell me the letter grade you'd give to this team.
It's got to be a D. I mean, they're 0-4 in the preseason, so they didn't win any games, which I'm not sure that's a real test of how you're going to fare in the regular season. Teams have gone winless and then gone on to have great years. But the Browns just seem like a mess. They're tearing this whole thing down and really rebooting. They have a new coach in Hugh Jackson. There have been some bright spots with Terrell Pryor's emergence at wide receiver. But the RG3 quarterback reclamation project is the biggest story probably in Cleveland. And I thought that he got worse as the preseason went on. He was playing so poorly that Coach Jackson decided to play him in preseason game number 4, which is scary. In the NFL today, when you have starters playing in the last preseason game, it really means your team isn't in great shape. They don't have a ton of talent, and I think they're the worst team in the league this year. They've got to be the odds-on favorite to get the number one pick.
When you look at RG3 and you talk about the fact that he's regressed over the course of the preseason, what specifically did you see that makes you say that?
Well, I'm worried about his ability to read a defense and to actually display the skill set that you need to play quarterback in this league at a high level. He looked like the same guy in Washington, where when you put pressure on him, he would shut down and take sacks and try to do it all with his legs. And that can work when you're a rookie Heisman Trophy winner and you're 100% healthy. But I think the book is out, that the jig is up with RG3 and that kind of style. So I think now, you know, he's got to improve in those areas. That he still throws a beautiful long ball, and you saw him complete a couple of deep passes. Everything else is a check down. And a lot of this league is about completing the 15-yard out, the 10-yard hitch. And I didn't see much progress from him in that world. Now, it's always hard to tell in the preseason, and it's possible that they would come out and have a lot of different new wrinkles that would show him as an improved player. But, you know, I think he's still got a long way to go. And my best guess is that we're liable to see more of the RG3 from post his rookie year than the RG3 from 2012 when he won Rookie of the Year.
Aaron, does Cleveland have in the backfield a 1-2 punch that's going to work for them?
You know, I think the running game is a huge key for them this year if they're going to win any games at all. And I think they have two players that are different in terms of their skill sets. Isaiah Crowell is a straight-ahead runner, and Duke Johnson's going to help them mostly in the passing game, which I think he showed last year in his rookie year. But I just don't think either of those players is very good, Nate. They don't have a game breaker. They don't have Todd Gurley. They don't have David Johnson. They don't have one of the top running backs in the NFL. I would slot both of those guys like in the 20s or 30s if you're ranking fantasy guys this year. So while they need help from the running game, I'm not sure how much either one of those guys is capable of giving.
When you look at the receiving core, folks have talked about Corey Coleman, and, you know, obviously any receiver that comes out of that Baylor offense, you know, it's sort of like coming out of the old school Texas Tech or even TCU sometimes with these receivers, that their numbers are really big in college. Now the question is, how do they translate to the NFL? But when you look at this receiving core, you know, obviously Josh Gordon, you know, when he's able to play, when he's not in the principal's office, is a big part of it. But what about Corey Coleman?
I think he's got a lot of promise and potential. He was not healthy in the preseason. He missed the first two preseason games with a hamstring injury. But he's got a lot of speed, and there were a lot of smart people who thought he was the best receiver in this draft class. I think if the Browns had a proven veteran in front of them, that would really help him out a lot. He's got to step in to this mix here and really be the number one receiver on this team. And so, you know, he only had one catch in the preseason, which I thought was a little bit concerning. He's got to stay healthy. And then I think the big issue right now with him, Nate, he's got a confidence problem, which he admitted to after preseason game number four. He thought he would step on the field in the two preseason games he played it and light it up, and it really didn't go that way for him. He had a couple drops on the practice field yesterday. He had one big drop in the fourth preseason game. So he's got to get over that as he gets himself acclimated to how to play at this level.
Given all the challenges that Cleveland's had and that they're trying to, you know, build themselves back up, and Aaron, in your mind, did they hire the right guy with Hugh Jackson?
Yet to be seen. You know, I've seen so many coaches, Nate, come and go in this town. You've got no idea. People in Cleveland thought Romeo Crennel would be the savior, and he was a disaster. People were sure that Eric Mangini would fix this mess, and he went 4-12, just like everybody else. So I'm not going to throw any bouquets at Hugh Jackson before he's even coached a game. And I think that's fair. I don't mean to tear him down either. I'm not saying he's not the guy yet. The biggest thing is finding a quarterback. I mean, I don't know. Is Bill Belichick such a great coach because he's a genius or because he gets to coach Tom Brady every day? How about Mike McCarthy? Is he a Hall of Fame coach or does he just have Aaron Rodgers and that's why he's won a Super Bowl? Hugh has to help find the quarterback, the answer to the biggest question in Cleveland sports ever. Who is quarterbacking the Browns? So far, we got RG3. We talked about him. Big questions. Cody Kessler is a rookie who's looked totally overmatched in the preseason. That's the guy Hugh drafted. They passed on Carson Wentz, who they have to face in week one on Sunday against the Eagles. And then they put Kevin Hogan on the practice squad, a quarterback from Stanford. So I'm not sure the Browns have their answer yet at quarterback. And I think Hugh will be judged in the long run on whether or not he finds the guy that can finally take us out of the hell the Browns have been in since they came back to the league since 99.
You brought it up a minute ago. You were talking about fantasy football and how we look at running backs or receivers or quarterbacks for that matter. But on the flip side of that, when it comes to fantasy, you know, there's the statement that says if you got an offensive guy going up against the Browns defense, you probably want him in your starting lineup because he's going to get some points for you. Where are the bright spots on the Browns defense?
Oh, my gosh. You're asking me for bright spots on this defense? That's the hardest question I've been asked in an interview in 10 years. Joe Hayden is a Pro Bowl caliber player. At least he was a few years ago. But he's coming off of a bad year and an injury-plagued year. And I think he's got to really prove it, Nate. I do. I think he's got to prove that he's still in that elite level. Other than that, the Browns have two rookies, I would say, who are worth watching. Their second-round pick is Emmanuel Ogba, and their third-round pick is Carl Nassib. And those two guys finished 1-2 in sacks in college football last year. They've both flashed a little bit in the preseason. And the hope is that as the year goes on, those two guys really develop into players. They're both going to start from day one on this defense because really, other than that, they don't have a ton of playmakers.
Last one for you here. As you get ready to go into the season, you look at this Browns team, you look at a squad that had three wins last year. What's realistic, Aaron?
I think it's possible that they don't win a game this year, Nate. I'm not going to predict that, but I think it's possible. My best guess is they win two, maybe three. I think they're worse to start the year than last year. But they don't have to deal with the whole Johnny Manziel fiasco anymore,
right,
which I think will help them. I don't think that's going to be a distraction for them this time around. But I just look at the talent on the field. And in the end, in this league, talent wins. And the Browns are the least talented team in football. I hope this group has them pointed in the right direction. Maybe they'll get a Deshaun Watson or someone at the top of next year's draft that can really help get it going. But I can't be optimistic and say they would win more than three games.
He's on Twitter at HammerNation19 from ESPN Cleveland. We're talking Browns with Aaron Goldhammer. Aaron, really appreciate the time talking Browns with us. As much as it might have depressed you a little bit, you sound a little down compared to how we started, but nonetheless.
It is what it is. In Cleveland, we won a championship in basketball. Our baseball team's in first place, so, you know, we can take our lumps with the football squad.
Hey, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right? Aaron, really appreciate really appreciate the time, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Nate. Yeah.
Aaron, with us coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around. around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
Well, I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am, and I'm not. From the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like a Mike Mularkey. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well, and if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship-caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan, or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you, and we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No, it's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.